Word up, word of mouth Wednesday. We're back here for another Wednesday. This is the 27th of October, 2010, and we got a big show lined up tonight. This is our The Bubble Has Burst in Toronto show. We have a new mayor, a new city council has been elected. The gravy train might be stopping soon. First up, we'll run down a bit of the mayor results, and then Robin Nieto has got planned a interview with First Nations women to speak out in Toronto against the tar sands. Melina, a member of the Lubicon Cree north of Northern Alberta, who's been working on campaigns and projects about the tar sands, will be joining Robin Nieto first up on the show. And then also tonight we've got in the studio joining us on the topic of G20 Exposed will be actually the filmmakers behind the documentary. Director Adam Letalik and producer Derek Soborel will be joining us for our My Heart Bleeds and Officer Bubbles lawsuit tribute segment. And then also we've got Dan Dix from Press for Truth is going to join us on the phone as well a bit later on to talk with us about this major situation fallout from the G20 Officer Bubbles lawsuit and legal situation. That all that and more coming up on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. But first, I think it might be a good idea to just get into the man you're going to be hearing a lot more over the next 4 years from the man who is actually conducting the gravy train currently, Rob Ford. Here is just a quick clip of Toronto's mayor, future mayor, well, mayor-elect. Here is the man, Rob Ford.
CB24 is making the call. Rob Ford has been elected mayor of Toronto.
Our campaign team was a focus group that could not get us off our message. We focused watching taxpayers' money, and we're going to put an end to the gravy train.
And we were live as Rob Ford watched as CP24 made the call. He is the next mayor of Toronto.
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, we will stop the gravy train.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday, back here in the studio for our October the 27th episode. And that just there was, you heard a bit of the gravy train there on the move. Rob Ford has been elected as the mayor of Toronto with, and I got it, here's a bit of the results here from Toronto.ca, the official site of Toronto. Number one, first place, Rob Ford, 383,501 votes, equals 47% of the electorate in Toronto voted Rob Ford. The second place, runner-up, George Smitherman, only had 89,832 votes, which is 35% of the electorate. And then in the third place was Joe Pantalone, who joined us on the show last week for a few minutes, with 95,000 or 12% of the electorate. So that equals out to about 94,000 voted for the top three candidates, 6% of the 813,984 people voted for other candidates. Other candidates on the ballot, if you voted, you'd notice there's 40 candidates. So I'll shout out some of the other candidates. Fifth place, George Babula, the Parkdale Party, with over 3,000 votes. Rocco Champong, sixth place, with 2,800 votes. And a big showing in ninth place, Vijay Sharma, a former CKLN programmer here, whatyouwantabelievein.com, Toronto Truth Seeker, Vijay Sharma, with 2,264 votes for a ninth place out of 40. So good showing there from Black Krishna. And well, you know, we're going to be, of course, following the mayor race or the what's going on here with a new mayor, Rob Ford, coming into the office, because well, Rob Ford, one of his campaign pledges involves, I guess, no more secrets at City Hall. All in-camera meetings will, I guess, be open, he said. There's going to be no more secret meetings, no more sole source contracts, a whole lot of pledges that we can try in the media. We can keep on looking to see, you know, if how honest, how honest this guy really is. Well, you know, I think we're going to start up the show here just because our co-host here, Robin Nieto. Actually, we got our co-host, Robin Nieto, has just arrived in Studio 2. So we're just going to have to get things settled here. But because we're going to be talking about the G20 a bit later, why don't I just play a quick clip here of the Public Safety Minister, Vic Tase, on the ISU talking about the Integrated Security Unit. And then we'll come back with Robin's segment. But here's just a quick...
The Integrated Security Unit, led by the RCMP, was struck and established to coordinate the provision of security. Included in the ISU were representatives from the Ontario Provincial Police, the Toronto Police Service, Peel Regional Police Service, and the Department of National Defense. There were more than 20,000 police officers and military personnel deployed to the unified command centers, as well as in and around the two summit sites, to ensure security for the internationally protected persons and their delegations. I think it's important to note that there were more delegates at these summits than there were athletes at the 2010 Winter Olympic Paralympic Games in Vancouver. This was confirmed by the Auditor General, who noted the following, and I quote, "Obviously, $1 billion is a lot of money, but I think we have to recognize that security is expensive. There are a lot of people involved over a long period of time. We may think that the meetings only last for a few days, but all the preparations involve extensive planning, extensive coordination for months before, and I think we have to be really, really careful." End of quote. Security is expensive, but a non-negotiable endeavor.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much, Libby. A little bit late here in the studio. This is Robin, and you're listening to Wednesday Word of Mouth here on CKLN 88.1 FM, transmitting from Ryerson University in downtown Toronto. So, the topic for me this week is the environment. We got a couple of things happening. We got next week on Friday, we have Greenpeace that's releasing a new report on how to protect Ontario's boreal forest and the disappearing caribou. There are only 20,000 caribou left in Ontario. They are mostly in northern Ontario, and Greenpeace will be at the Minister of Natural Resources office in Brampton, of all places. The Minister of Natural Resources is Linda Jeffrey. Greenpeace is going to be there with a caribou caravan. Yep, they're going to be setting up a street theater outside of her office, and they will be sending the message to Minister Linda Jeffrey that the caribou are disappearing, and so is the boreal forest in Ontario. The caribou is directly the same thing, not just directly related, but it's the same thing as the beloved reindeer. Yeah, that's right, the beloved reindeer. That's the same species, caribou, reindeer. They are the same thing, and they are disappearing here in Ontario. And Greenpeace will be at Minister Jeffrey's constituency office this Friday morning. And tonight, it's was another issue about tar sands. And this time, it's First Nations women who are in Toronto tonight talking out against tar sands. Now, tar sands, for Torontonians, I'm sure a lot of environmentalists out there who are listening know exactly what it means. But for a lot of us who may not know as much as you, tar sands, in our minds, could just mean a dirty place where Canada gets its oil. But we spoke tonight, or at least I spoke tonight, with Melina Laboucan-Massimo. She is from northern Alberta. She is a member of the Lubicon Cree. She's worked for 10 years as an Indigenous rights advocate with organizations such as Indigenous Media Arts Society, the Native Media Society. She's studied here in Toronto at York University, and she is working now as a climate and energy campaigner with Greenpeace in Alberta. She was here tonight to talk at the National First Nations Women Speakers Tour on tar sands, and that's tonight between 7 and 9 at the University of Toronto. And she spoke to me tonight, and I'm hoping that we can get that clip now. I think I'm just going to interrupt in places because this is totally unedited. So
caribou are here we go. Very important.
Well,
Canadian
no,
species.
Actually, that's
we
another
see the
one.
Critter on the back of the Canadian
it's
quarter.
It's the next interview. So we got the. I just came rushing in from the interview with.
My name is Melina Lepokan-Massimo, and I come from the Lubicon Cree First Nation. That's in the northern part of Alberta where tar sands exist currently. So I'm here to discuss the issues and the impacts that are affecting First Nation communities on their traditional territories, and whether that be impacts from the tar sands industry and as well as the regulation that is lacking on the part of the federal and Canadian government.
Melina, for those of us who live in Toronto, the tar sands means just a dirty place where Canada gets its oil. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it actually means to you and your community.
Well, our communities have lived there for thousands and thousands of years. So there's a lot of traditional medicine, plant medicine, a lot of herbs and berries, for instance, that we use traditionally, as well as wildlife that we have sustained ourselves on for thousands of years as well. So the boreal forest is very significant to First Nations peoples in the northern part of Alberta, as well as across Turtle Island, which is now called Canada. So it's not only just, a change of lifestyle, but it's also a loss of culture, a loss of tradition, and also effects on our health, our health and wellness in the communities as well.
What's the situation about the tar sands? Like what, we heard about okay, the, we're
so
hearing about
this
the,
question
the
is just about what tar sands is all about.
You know, a lot of negative, propaganda, well, not propaganda, but a lot of negative campaign against the tar sands. But what exactly does all of this mean?
What does what mean? The
how bad is the situation in Alberta? Is it just one section? How big is this section? What's the scale of the destruction? What does it look like?
Okay. So what we're talking about is 140,000 square kilometers, which is either equivalent to the country of England and Wales combined or the size of the state of Florida, which is quite a large state in the U.S. So we're talking about thousands and thousands of kilometers, stretches of lands, traditional territories that are, indigenous peoples have lived for thousands of years. And we're talking about also the impact through whether it be for water, whether through the boreal, whether it be digging up the boreal, whether it be the injection of either in situ or mining, there's a lot of different impacts that are happening in the traditional territories of the First Nations peoples that live there, as well as to settler communities as well. We're seeing more incidences of miscarriages in cattle populations from neighboring farmers, which have been in discussion with. So there's issues related to the health of the people there, as well as the health of the wildlife, as well as the farm animals that live in these areas because of, the emissions that come off of these plants and or the contamination of the water sources and also the drying out of those watersheds as well.
What are the major players in Alberta? Like which oil company should we be watching for in Toronto?
It's actually every international major oil company in the world that are involved in the tar sands or that are currently looking at investment in the tar sands. So whether that be from Imperial Oil to Exxon to, local ones like Syncrude and Suncor, to also international ones like Total and Stat Oil, to also PetroChina. So, I mean, there's a variety, a wide range of different oil companies that are looking towards the tar sands because, we are now scraping the bottom of the barrel here in Alberta.
So if the destruction's happening out there, what is the government of Alberta actually doing to try to stem this situation?
What's the government of Alberta doing? I wouldn't necessarily say that. They seem to be acting more like a PR campaign than they are concerned about the actual effects of what's happening in the tar sands. You know, they talk about trying to have regulation and monitoring, but we're seeing the lack of enforcement of those quote-unquote regulations and, you know, monitoring systems that should be in place. A lot of them have been deemed inadequate. So this is putting a lot of people at risk, as you can imagine, and the land at risk, and as well as our water sources. The tar sands are based on the Peace Athabasca Delta, which is one of the largest intact water systems in the world as well. It's a sixth of Canada's fresh water supply. So we're talking about a lot of water that's being threatened.
And what does the government, federal government of Canada, what do they have to do with this, and what should they be doing?
Well, they should definitely be overlooking and overseeing what's not happening in the case of Alberta's lack of regulations and monitoring systems that are in place. As well, the federal government is also responsible for the treaty rights and the treaty rights violations that are happening on part of tar sands companies in regards to First Nations communities. So, and they're actually... court cases currently that stand against the Canadian government, as well as the federal, as well as the provincial government, as well as, you know, which is implicating these tar sands companies, in response to Section 35 of the Canadian Constitution, which are pointing out that there's a violation of these traditional and treaty and Aboriginal rights and titles to the land.
And Melina, you're going to be heading to a climate conference, a United Nations climate conference in Cancun. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, as most people probably know, Copenhagen in, you know, COP15 was somewhat of a disappointment because a lot of the countries that should have signed on to making a binding agreement didn't. And Canada was one of those countries that actually had pushed fervently to oppose there actually being a binding treaty, what would make countries responsible for reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. And a lot of people saw there that Canada is not committing to reducing their greenhouse gas emissions because projects like the tar sands. So basically, we'll be there again in Cancun to address these issues to ensure that Canada is has the pressure that it needs to internationally, as well as, you know, from people that are coming from the tar sands to address the issues of the tar sands and making it an international issue as well. And it's a damage and tarnishing Canada's international reputations, and people should know about what's happening here in Canada, which is supposedly a first world country, when there's a lot of human rights and treaty violations that are happening in its own backyard.
And back here, the significance of this conference, can you tell us a little bit about this conference here in Toronto?
Right now?
Yeah.
So basically today we're at the kickoff of a First Nations woman speaking tour. So a lot of times we are finding that voices are being left out of the dialogue. You know, we hear from government, we hear from industry, but we're not hearing from the people that are actually impacted from the communities, especially women that, you know, usually bear the brunt of what are happening in the communities, whether it be in regards to water, because they you know, they're raising their family and they have to deal with repercussions of these health issues on their children. So we're talking about, you know, raising up the voices of women that are from these communities, as well as, you know, and are in resistance to these projects because they want their traditional territories to be left in the pristine conditions in which they once were. And a lot of, you know, our water and our land is being threatened because of the projects like the tar sands.
So for people here in Toronto who would want to do something for, you know, to tell the government or to tell the companies that this is wrong, and they're still driving their cars, what could they do?
Definitely pushing for a change of the way in which we produce our energy. So, you know, pushing for governments to be responsible investors in renewable energy paths, renewable energy sources. You know, we don't see this renewable energy investment, especially in places like Alberta, where we've seen no solar energy investment, and yet it's the sunniest province in the country. And why don't we see that happening? We see a little bit of, you know, wind energy investment, but that's about it. And I think that's a lack of responsible governance on the part of the Alberta government, especially because we are not, you know, we're left with between a rock and a hard place, you know, in Alberta. You know, people are saying.
All right. Sorry, that was Melina Lubican-Massimo, and she is from the Lubican Cree of Northern Alberta. She is in town tonight talking at the National First Nations Women Speakers Tour on tar sands, and that's at the University of Toronto at the Sydney Smith Center, and that's going on right now until 9 o'clock. Back to you, Daniel.
Word up. Thanks a lot, Robin. We're just here in the studio. We're just about ready to get into our feature topic here of the G20. But first, might be a good time to just play a track here by someone, a G20 related activist, out of Tesla Logic, and also someone who's concerned about the tar sands, Illogic. We interviewed him a few weeks ago. Here's Illogic, Do What You Love, and then we'll be right back here on Word of Mouth Wednesday. Word up.
Every day, I wake up and give thanks for this life. Life, it's but a dream, a spirit, a ghost inside the machine. Like a river, it flows gentle as a stream. The rapids come rapidly, we see the knowledge we find within its shore. Swim upstream if you choose to ignore the signs around you. It's time to explore the nature of being. Bust down the doors, sing your song, yeah, write the score. Through the sunny days, even if it pours, break free, the heavens soar. Liberate your spirit, I implore. Concentrate and hear it, you can't ignore. Hesitate, we hear it, we all are born. Meditate, don't fear it, we all are on the river of life, better love what you're doing. Do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. I said, do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. Yeah, life, it's like a love affair. Into my lover's eyes I stare deeply. Yeah, she can keep me on the plains of existence. You can meet me, I'm seeking truth. That's why I'm speaking ever so freely, ready to greet the new day with a wink and a smile. Salute the sun. All the while, all I've done, I compile, let it float down the river. No denial, just dust in the wind. We all are born and all will face the end. But there's no reason to be sad to experience this moment. I'm so glad, never let it drop, go to waste. Love every step, cause it isn't a race. Do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. I said, do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. Yeah. Sometimes you gotta take that leap. The universe will catch you and keep you moving. The way you gotta be, what you gotta see, who you ought to be. Cause we all got our destiny. This is just life testing me. We all got some stress, let's see. No money, no home, won't let it get to me. I do what I love and love what I do. It's true, I value all the special people that includes you. If you do what you love, it's like a light from above. It's more than enough, don't need all the stuff they sell. It's like a cell, it's why I rebel. If you couldn't tell, let's break the spell and start anew. Do what you love and love what you do. Love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. I say it, do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. Yeah, do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. I say it, do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. Yeah.
And with respect to the operations itself, and I mean, I saw visions on TV that disturbed me of police cars being overturned and windows being vandalized and broken. Can you explain to me the concept that I understand is sometimes employed by protesters at these events? And I think the word is black bloc. Are you familiar with that term? Can you tell me what that means?
Well, black bloc is a tactic that is utilized by groups who dress normally in black. Their faces are covered. They blend in with the crowd, and then at some point in time dress in their black outfits and then break away and do what we saw at the G20. The type of damage we saw at the G20 is not unusual for black bloc tactics. Then once they're finished doing that, they blend back into the crowd, take off the black outfit, go back to the clothes they were wearing before, and they're very difficult to find because of that.
So I take it from that answer that black bloc was employed by protesters at the G20 in Toronto.
That's correct.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and this is our G20 Exposed segment right here. Joining us in the studio, we have some guests here that it's a great to welcome to the show today. The director and the producer, Derek and Adam, of the G20 Exposed documentary. Hello, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, word up. Yeah, good to see you guys in the studio. Good to hear you guys. And I guess I just want to get started here with our special segment here, My Heart Bleeds. It's an Officer Bubbles lawsuit tribute segment. This is not necessarily a tribute to the lawsuit, but actually a tribute to those affected by this lawsuit. It's a major multi-million-dollar lawsuit. Well, I guess maybe you guys can give us some details. What have you guys heard about this lawsuit here and related to the G20 and this Officer Bubbles?
Yeah, the Real News covered a story that main reporter Jesse Freestein, who was at the G20 and who was actually punched as a reporter. So he came out with a cover story, Officer Bubbles Busted for Blowing Bubbles. And basically, there was a statement made by a Toronto police officer threatening to arrest a woman for blowing bubbles. Now, these are weapons in his mind, but in our mind, we see a lot of the stories pertaining to G20 and what were considered weapons. So we have a gentleman, 57-year-old amputee, who had a prosthetic leg. He works for Revenue Canada. His name is John Prine. They labeled his leg a weapon. So when we see stories like this and bubbles being weapons, it's preposterous. And Jesse Freestein from The Real News really broke the story. It's that headline that everybody likes to read in the newspaper, Officer Bubbles, you know? So it's kind of funny to see police acting this way and having this demeanor and this aggressive attitude towards people peacefully protesting. So basically, I'm the one that broke the story, and I'd like to get that out there because I believe in democracy, I believe in freedom of speech, and the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms Act was violated during the G20. So I think we all have the right to speak up when we see unprecedented police tactics happen at G20. So somebody was anonymous, and they came to me and sent me an email on YouTube. And it was a Ontario Superior Court of Justice statement of claim. Now, I thought this was funny. I didn't think it was real. So I looked it over. I read it, and Officer Bubbles is suing a cartoonist, a political satire cartoonist, who just was mentioning a lot of facts that happened at G20, but had a spin on it. And it's to make fun of the situation, what happened at G20. And Officer Bubbles thinks it's a defamation of character. So he's suing the individual cartoonist, but also 25 individual YouTube commenters.
Well,
so this is a big deal, but they didn't think it was going to get publicity. Now, I thought it was important for the Canadian public to know the truth. That's why I contacted the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, and it got on the front page of the Toronto Star. It's become a national headline in Canada. Fox News has covered it in the U.S. Globe and Mail has covered it. So has CTV, they did a story. So if anybody is out there and you're curious about this fiasco, you can type in Officer Bubbles on YouTube, and it's got over 700,000 hits.
Right, the original Real News video's got the over 700,000 hits. This video's gone viral, and then so have these other videos now have gone viral that are mentioned in the lawsuit, these cartoon clips that are mentioned in the lawsuit. And there's another video that's making a lot of noise here on the internet coming out of Toronto, and it's actually the video that you guys made, G20 Exposed. And there's actually a sequence in there that you guys had the Officer Bubbles, some clips from the Real News, as well as one of the cartoons in the documentary. Because of this lawsuit, is this still in the documentary? What is happening right now with this situation?
Well, the documentary was split up into chapters, and Chapter 8 was the Parkdale occupation, and it went through all the events that occurred in Parkdale on the Sunday afternoon at the G20, and that was where the Officer Bubbles incident happened, where Officer Bubbles threatened to arrest a girl for assault for blowing bubbles. And then someone had made a series of 8 cartoons. They're just like political satire cartoons, sort of using Officer Bubbles, a cartoon image of him, sort of depicting him doing various acts that police had been accused of doing over the G20 weekend. You know, things like, you know, arresting Barack Obama and Santa Claus, just sort of, you know, it was clearly a joke. And so when I saw this lawsuit, I was like, wow, we got to, get rid of this because, I don't want to be sued for having this cartoon in there, which in my opinion was, some of the least controversial things in the documentary itself. So yeah, we took that down from YouTube, and we're currently editing the chapter back together to get rid of the cartoon, because we certainly didn't intend on defaming anyone. We were just sort of reporting, you know, what had happened, and, you know, just sort of throwing a little cartoon in there, just for some humor, because the documentary is all, it's all facts, and it's all real footage that happened there. And so, yeah, as a result of this, you know, we don't want to get sued. So, yeah, we took the cartoon out. But since, actually, all the cartoons got removed from YouTube, but they've since then been re-uploaded on a variety of different channels. And that sort of shows that if you try and censor the internet and censor YouTube, that, you know, that doesn't really work very well. And it actually sort of ends up making the problem a lot worse. And so that's why now you can, you know, there's a lot more people now have seen the cartoons and have seen, you know, the original video as well, a result of the lawsuit and the publicity that it got.
Right. So this is sort of you know, this is like a major blowback from this lawsuit. I guess he was trying to get the stuff removed, trying to get these people to stop leaving comments, and now there's more views than ever, more comments than ever. We don't know if there's going to be, you know, more lawsuits than ever. But what we do know is that Derek, you were instrumental in getting this word out. But I guess just in case you didn't quite explain it in the last time, like, how, after you received this note from this person that had received this lawsuit, like, how were you able to get the word out? How did the media find out about this?
Yeah, basically I had a PDF document on the statement of claim, and I got some anonymous sources who came to me because they trusted me, because I am the producer of the film, and they might have had that perspective to come to me to take it public. So basically Google sent out emails to those 25 individuals saying that they had 7 days to respond, or else they will release the information to the lawyer. Now, the lawyer's main prerogative was to get the cartoons removed, which they have done. And there's a Toronto Star article. Basically, he said, the quote was, "At this stage, we were successful in getting the cartoons taken down, which was our primarily objective. And I don't know whether we will or will, I don't know whether we will or we won't not pursue the remaining the remedies available to us."
That's an interesting statement.
So it's funny how they didn't go public first. Exactly. If this was really a threat to Officer Bubbles, and like threats to his family and so forth, you know, we're not here to defame anybody. We're just here to relay the news and stay true to the facts. So we censored the clip out of the documentary, and we respect that. The facts, you know. So we just don't like it when officers can't take criticism because of their behavior and try to go after and police the internet, because you're going towards 6 billion people that are on 6 million, I guess, I don't know how many, but YouTube members that leave comments any day. So it's unwarranted, it's a fiasco, and it's laughable. So
right, and the word is getting out now more than ever. After this lawsuit has been filed, there is now independent media is now looking into this a lot. And actually, today, uploaded today, was a clip from Press for Truth about Officer Bubbles, uploaded on YouTube. Press for Truth confronts Officer Bubbles, and here is a few minutes of that clip, and then of the audio from that clip. And then we're actually going to try to get Dan Dix of Press for Truth on the phone line. But here you're going to hear some clips from the Real News famous confrontation where Officer Bubbles earned the nickname Officer Bubbles. And then also some clips from Brian Law's recent interview or confrontation with the Constable Josephs. And then also a clip from 2007, the Press for Truth. That was a throwback clip here, but all you're going to hear all that, and we're going to be right back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday.
You understand me? Right, you're going to be in handcuffs, all right? You either knock it off with the bubble, you touch me with that bubble, you're going into custody.
I don't feel very good. I'm just...
That's terrible.
Trying to
That's
keep
terrible.
Me happy.
My heart bleeds.
Mine too.
Right?
I'm here.
Put it away. Right, knock it off.
Yeah. Are you the, I guess now famous Officer Bubbles?
Have a nice day.
No?
Have a nice day.
Are you?
My name is A. Josephs.
A. Josephs.
Yes, Officer Joseph, sir. Oh,
okay.
Sounds fair. Have a nice day.
Yeah, how do you feel about the whole the video and everything that surfaced? Like, you know, looking back on it now.
There's nothing to look back on. did my job. I'm a police officer, right?
You touched me with that bubble. You're going into custody. Do you understand me?
People are talking about how you took down your Facebook profile and stuff like that off air. And I mean, you know, there's been quite a bit of fallout because of that stuff, so...
My private life is not open for discussion, okay?
Uh-huh.
Take care of yourself.
In public life, though, as a police officer.
Yeah, that's different.
We interviewed you a few years ago. You probably don't remember. You were calling your friend saying you're learning about the police state and you're thinking about changing your name to Boris.
It won't be me. You got the wrong guy.
And I'm just outside of City TV. I'm getting educated about a police state. I feel like a communist already. I'm going to change my name to Boris. Yeah, what's up? Fuck. Oh, snap, you had an arrest, eh?
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. That music that you're hearing right now in the background is just some of, that's the actual soundtrack for a lot of these cartoons that are generating this... well, that have resulted in this lawsuit, generating a lot of views on the internet as well, Officer Bubbles Cartoons. And joining us on the line is actually a producer and one of the people behind that, some of that video that you just heard the audio from. We have the Press for Truth reporter right now on the phone, Dan Dix. Hey, Dan.
Hey, man. How are you?
Hey, not bad. We just listened to, we got Derek and Adam here from G20 Exposed in the station. And
cool.
We just listened to the audio there from the Press for Truth clip that was put out today on Officer Bubbles, I guess. Could you talk about what this clip is, why you guys put it out?
Yeah, basically, in light of this lawsuit coming out, we thought we'd put this clip out. It was a little over a month ago now. Brian Law ran into Bubbles at it was actually on September 11th at one of our September 11th street actions. He was just up the street, so we had the opportunity to confront him on this viral video of the whole Bubbles incident. So we did that, and actually at the time, we weren't really planning on releasing the video. We knew it'd be a pretty good video, but at that time we felt it wasn't exactly important information to be putting out, so we didn't bother. However, in light of this new lawsuit coming out, we thought, you know what, let's show the world what this guy has to say about a police state and what he has to say about the incident. You know, he basically just said, look, I did my job. I'm a police officer and I did my job. So, once he started acting like a douche and launching a lawsuit, we figured it would be a good thing to show everybody a little bit more of his character.
Right. And everyone can check out the clip if they log on to pressfortruth.ca, the website. But I also wanted to ask you about how you put the clip together, because I know you put the Real News interview in there, the confrontation with Brian Law, your clip from 2007. But then also at the end, you finished off with some of the clips of one of these infamous cartoons. Why did you decide to put the cartoon in?
Well, because of that's what this whole thing is stemming from. With over 25 people involved in this lawsuit, all because of this, cartoon, we figured, it's all part of the current story. So we wanted to show people what all the fuss is about.
Right. And I guess the current story for Press for Truth right now, are you guys working on your own G20 documentary?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been working hard on it for a few years. I'm actually over at Steve's place right now, and we're working on cutting together a little trailer for it. But we've been working hard on that, and we're going to do our best to try to get that out to everybody as soon as we can.
Awesome. And Dan, just to ask you something here, I was just wondering, did you check the Toronto Star yesterday? Did you see a reference to United We Fall in Toronto Star?
No,
No, okay, I can read out you the quote right here, because they've connected, this is a quite strange article, because they're, you know how Toronto Star sort of attacking the Rob Ford campaign? So they got a Ford victory election, campaign buzz, blunders, and bulletins. And then they talk about a Star journalist who arrived at Rob Ford's victory party, found 12 tables, and none for the Toronto Star outlet. And then he goes, I guess he leaves, and he goes back into the... to the after party, and then there's a person handing out drink tickets, it says, at the door when they're handing out these Rob Ford whistles, and the guy at the door tells the reporter to watch the Obama deception. And then he says the Obama deception is a phenomenon, is a hoax carefully crafted by the captains of the New World Order. Then the reporter enters the room a second time, and the drink ticket man repeated the same recommendation and then told the reporter to watch United We Fall, a documentary about the North American Union that is being developed right now between Canada, the United States, and Mexico, is the quote. So it is in the Toronto Star, but they've, they're putting it in a strange section here. Campaign buzz, blunders, and bulletins.
No way. I had no idea. That's very interesting.
I got the clipping right here. I'll scan it for you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, thanks for the heads up. I didn't know that.
Because it looks almost like they're trying to connect the Rob Ford with this conspiracy way of thinking. But, it's almost like we need to make the Rob Ford deception next.
Yeah, true. maybe that'll be the next PFT project.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Weird. Yeah. So, thanks for joining us here. Derek and Adam, you guys got any questions for Dan? Yeah, anything you guys wonder?
Because of the movie United We Fall, I think Canadians need to know what's going on behind these closed door meetings. You know, when we see 20,000 police officers coming to Toronto and arresting innocent protesters, but in the meanwhile, when they get the order to arrest Black Bloc, the order was to stand down, as was covered by an article in The Sun with Joe Warmington. So Dan did this video about United We Fall, and it pertains to what's going on behind these closed-door meetings. And I'd like to ask him if he can just educate the viewers on this North American Union and what's going on worldwide with these austerity measures, you know?
Yeah, well, just to bring everybody, make sure all the listeners are on the same page here. Yeah, the North American Union is this concept of Canada, U.S., and Mexico joining together into a union. You can look at the European Union as a blueprint for this thing. So in the film United We Fall, we basically track the push towards this thing that has been developing incrementally, basically through various trade deals. So we document all the deals, starting as far back on the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs. We get into the Free Trade Agreement, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and of course the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And we basically outline how all these things are moving us towards this idea of a North American Union. And then we take it a step further and we show how all of this is potentially one more even bigger step towards the bigger picture of a global, a single world government.
Right. And that's what we're looking ahead towards, this G20 Korea. We got it coming up in a few weeks. Thanks a lot, Dan, for all the work you're doing with Press for Truth.
Yeah, no problem, man. You guys keep it up. Derek, Adam, it's good to hear from you guys again. Your film is doing well. It's waking up a lot of people to the issues that that happened here in the G20. So, great job, you guys too.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. You know what? It wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for Dan and Press for Truth, because we commend the independent media for bringing out these facts to the Canadian public.
Well, we're all in this together, right?
Exactly.
I mean, we got to get the word out there to the people, and that's the bottom line. That's what it's all about.
For real. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Yeah, man. All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Peace. And that's Dan Dix there from Press for Truth, pressfortruth.ca, to check this new clip with Officer Bubbles, featuring Officer Bubbles in 2007, before he was known as Officer Bubbles, back when he was, he's worried that he was becoming a communist because he had been confronted with 9/11 truth activists telling him about the police state. I guess we've got a new nickname as Boris that he gave himself, or you know, this is the kind of this is the kind of situation we're into here. We've got Derek and Adam in the studio, and I just wanted to play a quick clip here, just because we've had the reference of the stand down order. Well, Chief Blair was confronted by Steve Paikin, one of the stars of the G20 Exposed documentary. Here is Bill Blair's. When he's asked about the order to stand down, here is his response. Here is the agenda clip.
It's also important to note the criminal intent, the criminal conspiracy to engage in those acts of vandalism and violence didn't end on Saturday afternoon. It continued throughout the weekend. And we were gathering a lot of information and monitoring the activities of that crowd. And we were doing everything we could throughout the course of the entire weekend to prevent a repeat.
Okay, let me read
what we had seen on Saturday afternoon.
I want to read a quote here from Joe Warmington, who thinks of himself as a friend of the cops and has written some good stuff about the police over the years. He's a Toronto Sun columnist. He says, "A police source tells me the only thing that stopped the officers from stopping the Black Bloc tactics was an order telling them not to. They tell me they could have rounded up all or most of them in no time. But even before that decision was made, says one insider, there was mass confusion and indecision." Quote, "The orders went from engage to no, don't engage, to engage to no, don't engage," said an officer. "Eventually there was a, quote, a clear order from the command center saying do not engage. And at that point, smelling weakness and no repercussions, the downtown was effectively turned over to the vandals, while police, up to 19,000 strong, were ordered to stay out of it." Okay, that's what he got from some cops on the force. What do you say?
He's wrong. That did not happen. And in fact, there was in our incident command center a lot of people moving as quickly as possible to ensure that we were able to respond and contain that threat in a safe way. You know, there's always anonymous people who think in hindsight, and the clarity of their hindsight is remarkable. But in hindsight, you know, we would have done things differently. They would have saved the day. But the reality is there was a lot of people to respond to that situation.
But there wasn't a go, don't go.
There was no go, don't go. The people that are on the ground were not restricted from making tactical deployments and responses to what they were seeing.
All right. So that is the chief of the Toronto Police, Bill Blair. That is his thoughts there on the... This article that came out in the Toronto Sun of anonymous officers that were saying that they received an order to stand down. That is why you can watch the G20 Exposed documentary and see this riot group trashing the city for, well, it seems, how long do you think it was? How long, Adam, do you think what's your estimate?
Witnesses have said it was about an hour and a half, and it took place over about 24 blocks. The Black Bloc riot initially started on the Saturday afternoon. The peaceful protest had sort of gone through maybe with 25,000 people. And then at that point, a group of Black Bloc people broke off around Queen and Spadina, and they attacked a police car actually with the policeman inside it. So even right there, everyone should have been aware that, hey, these guys are committing vandalism. They're dangerous. They have weapons. They had sticks and hammers and things of that nature. So after that happened, you can see in the video that there were police sort of outside the Much Music building, all sort of along Queen Street at the intersection of Queen and University. And as the Black Bloc riot headed east down Queen Street, you see all the police standing down and pulling back and basically clearing the riot route for them. So they went east on Queen, and then they turned south down Bay Street to King, right in the financial district. That's where they set two cars on fire in that intersection. Then they went over to Yonge Street, and then they went all the way from Yonge and King all the way up to Yonge and College, smashing windows the whole way. And during the whole time on Yonge Street, you could see maybe a few cops, but they were just standing back letting it happen. There were a few cops at the intersection of King and Bay, but again, they were all standing back. And then once they got to Yonge and College, then they went basically back to Queen's Park. They got rid of their black disguises and sort of blended in with everyone. And then that gave the police the pretext to go in and sort of round up basically everyone at Queen's Park. They sort of surrounded the whole place. They arrested seemingly random people who, most of whom did not have anything to do with this riot, probably didn't even know that this was even occurring.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, we've got we've interviewed a few of them. We've interviewed a man with an amputee leg with one leg. We've interviewed a TTC driver walking to work. We've interviewed a candidate for mayor who's also a senior citizen arrested near U of T. All of this happening, you know, people that weren't even, you know, dressed in black, not even with this riot. That's why it seems almost symbolic how the whole thing ended in the free speech zone, this area of Queens Park. But you know, just to get you another fact here from recent testimony here. Here is how the RCMP commander, Alphonse McNeil, responds to the question about agent provocateurs being used in the G20. Here's a quick clip here.
Là, des policiers en civil qui vont dans la foule. Vous utilisez ça, vous, à la GRC?
No, we don't. Not for the purpose that the expression that you're using is used for. We have people in civilian garb who blend in with the crowd to advise us of the movement of the crowd and what tactics they may be using, but not to provoke or incite or anything of that nature.
So he is saying that there were officers within the crowd. I guess he's saying RCMP officers. Well, if he's the commander of the RCMP, but I guess he was commanding the whole operation. He did say that there were officers in the crowd advising them, you know, providing intelligence, I guess, of what's going on. You know, okay, with this whole G20 exposed documentary, and I know you guys get this, you probably get this a lot, like, what are your thoughts on this issue of agent provocateurs, you know, with all your research, what are you guys thinking?
Well, we have some footage in the documentary, which pertains to the SPP summit in Quebec, in Montebello, and it was on record, the CBC came out, and they said that that police were dressed up as anarchists, inciting violence, and that was proven. The police actually came out and had to admit that. So if we know that in past summits that has occurred, then it's open for investigation. That's pretty much what we're saying. We don't try to place blame. We don't try to suggest that in the video. We just prove the facts. So we want everybody to see the video for free. We want people in Canada to be aware, to be educated to the facts. Because we see this G20 summit go down in history, unprecedented. $1.3 billion of our money was spent. Fences were dividing the elites, you know, with these five-star hotels and the best chefs in the world. And we're suffering on the other end of it. We get beat down. We get illegally searched and detained. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms was violated. So we got to stand up as Canadians. We got to be aware of what's happening. So we want everybody to see it for free. They can go to www.torontog20exposed.ca. And if they like what they see and if they want to support us, we sell the DVD for $5. We make it affordable. It comes plastic wrapped, sealed, and it's got a really nice cover on there, so you can check out the website for yourself.
For real, for real. And this is a good one to send out as well if anybody knows anybody that's in Seoul, South Korea, because we've only got a few weeks left until what happened here in Toronto, you know, might take place again in Seoul, because the G20 is going to be headed to Seoul for the weekend of November 11th and 12th, so second weekend of November. You know, this is a worldwide type of thing. That's why this G20 Exposed documentary is so important to get out. And I actually got featured in a part of this G20 Exposed documentary, Chapter 9, where I get kettled. I get stuck in a kettle, cooking in the kettle in the cold rain. Well, also on that TVO interview, the chief of Toronto Police was asked about this kettle drill. And here's a quick clip here of what Bill Blair, his thoughts when he was informed about the kettle drill. What did the chief of Toronto Police do? Let's see.
It took longer than I think, in hindsight, was necessary to make a determination. The risk had sufficiently abated; we could let that crowd go.
So, did you come in and say stop?
Yeah, I did.
You did.
I did. When I became aware of it, that they were standing out there in the rain, and in my opinion, the risk had abated. I went to the command center, and the way in which the decision making was organized, it was a fairly well-organized matrix of decision-making from the commanders on the street working through the Major Incident Command Center. The only time I directly intervened in an operational decision over the course of that entire weekend was at Queen and Spadina on Sunday night, saying, the threat is past. Let these people go immediately and unconditionally, and we did.
Okay. We've talked about the Black Bloc techniques. We've talked about the protests. I want to talk about the five-meter rule now, or the five-meter misunderstanding, as I guess it was. Let's try to understand the genesis of this law. Who asked the Ontario government to pass a regulation to that law saying nobody within 5 meters of the perimeter of the...
First of all, that isn't what it says. What we asked for was a regulation. There were a lot of people planning in preparation for the G20. One of the things that the legal team attached to the Integrated Security Unit believed that there needed to be a clear articulation of the legal authorities dealing with persons entering and leaving the
summit site.
And you know, we looked at a number of different legislative authorities, and when I say we, I mean the legal team and the police officers involved in the planning. They looked at things like, for example, the Foreign Missions Act, which guides the activities of the RCMP. They also looked at other statutory authorities contained in the Police Services Act and common law authorities. And, frankly, the legal team believed that it was necessary to get a clearer articulation of those authorities. And so they approached, through my legal staff, asking if we would make a request of the, because the request has to come through me, a request of the Ontario government for a regulation to be passed under the Public Works Protection Act. The request was made under my signature to the Ontario government.
And
it was
it
was considered by cabinet in order and an order in council.
Word up, word of mouth Wednesday. So that is the chief of Toronto Police there on the agenda. TVO's the agenda, and Steve Paikin is actually one of the stars here of the G20 Exposed documentary, TorontoG20Exposed.ca for that documentary. And we still got the filmmaker, the director Adam, and the producer Derek as well in the studio. We heard Chief Bill Blair's there thoughts on the kettling. He was informed on the kettling, and he said, "Let them go. Let those people go." And then he got into the controversial issue there, the 5 meter rule. And actually, I know Derek, one of the first times we interviewed you, it was talking on this subject, because, you know, you had some experience right before the G20 with the 5 meter rule. What did you guys think about this act? I guess not even a law, it's an act. What did you guys think?
Yeah, it's called the Ontario Public Works Act, which is here to protect the public, but in essence, it was here to mislead the public on record. So this 5 meter rule came out that it never existed. So we have a clear violation here, and it falls upon Bill Blair. Now, we should fire Bill Blair. We should have an inquiry, a public inquiry, because you know what? When public servants lie to the Canadian taxpayers, there needs to be accountability. So when I walked into the fence with my camera to be a documentary filmmaker to see what was going on, I had an inclination that something wasn't right there. So I wanted to document that. They said if I didn't show ID, I would be arrested. Now, one person was arrested being close to that fence, the 5 meter rule. Went to court. The case got dropped. The paperwork mysteriously vanished. So here we go. We have a plain, clear violation here. The Bill Blair misleading the public, and it just wasn't clear. It wasn't put in the newspapers. They had like a website up talking about Ontario Public Works Act, but the 5 meter rule never existed. So we need to talk about that.
Fake law or act, rules that we're not even sure what are existing. And we've got the director of G20 Exposed, Adam. What are your thoughts on the 5 meter rule? And do you think we're going to get a public inquiry? What are you thinking here?
Well, I hope we get a public inquiry. We need more people to get involved and spread the truth about what happened at the G20. And the way to do that is you can send people to our website, TorontoG20Exposed.ca, order DVDs and make copies. But in the documentary, we have a whole chapter on the Public Works Protection Act. We have leading constitutional lawyers discussing this issue. We expose how Bill Blair knowingly lied. He said that he knew the rule didn't exist, but he basically misled the public in order to, quote, keep the criminals out.
For real, for real. And check out the Toronto G20 Exposed documentary. Thanks, Derek. Thanks, Adam, for joining us here today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. And also thanks to Robin Yetto, the co-host of the show, for his interview there too with Melina, speaking on the tar sands. You know, the trouble in the tar sands. Just listen to The Usual Suspects here in the background, the G20 protest song. And I just wanted to remind you all that this Sunday is the CKLN AGM. More info at CKLN.fm. It's the annual general meeting for the membership of CKLN Community Radio 88.1 FM. FM, CKLN Radio Inc. So stay tuned for our next show here. The Blues Dr. Julie Hill is in the studio to cure your music ills with the Blues Remedy, the Blue Remedy. Word up, word of mouth, word out.